Tactopia. Tactopia er en podcast om mennesker og deres teknologi. Den er udgivet af Ingeniørforeningen IDA i samarbejde med Teknologiens Mediehus, HI-messen, Index Award, Innovation Center Danmark og IDA Forsikring. Mit navn er Henrik Føns, og det er mig, der bestemmer i Tactopia. Har du nogensinde overvejet at få skudt en chip ind i din hånd? Sådan en lille elektronisk chip, der ligger i en glasampul, som du kan få skudt ind lige bag ved tommelfingeren. Så ligger den der med en masse information på, og du kan blandt andet bruge den til at åbne din dør, hvis du har sådan en Bluetooth-dørlås, eller du kan bruge den som adgangskort på dit arbejde, eller du kan have dit visitkort eller kortet til fitnesscenteret liggende i den. Det er der en hel del svensker, der har gjort. De bruger den blandt andet til at køre i tog med. Man kan faktisk køre i det svenske svar på DSB, uden at have et rejsekort, men bare have sin chip i hånden. Det, der måske er lidt bekymrende for nogen ved den ordning, det er, at det er arbejdsgiveren, der ligesom står bag den chip, som man så bruger til at køre tog med, fordi det er dem, der betaler togbilletten. Men ikke desto mindre, så er der faktisk også nogle danskere, der har hoppet på vognen. Folk, som er ansat i det svenske rejsebureau TUI, her i Danmark har også fået en chip i hånden. Og det kan jo meget hurtigt rejse med problemstillinger omkring data og sporing og hvem der egentlig ved, hvor man er, hvornår. Trenden med at få de her chips skudt ind i hånden, den startede i Stockholm for en 4-5 år siden, hvor en gruppe biohacker fik en piercer til at skyde de her sådan, chips ind i hånden, og så kan man så bruge sin mobiltelefon til at aflæse den information, der ligger på den her chip. Men det stopper ikke her, fordi de svenske biohacker, de vil gerne lave en helsechip, som kan ligge ind i hånden og måle på en masse helbredsdata, blandt andet ens blodsukker. Og det kan måske være en god idé, men igen, det er ikke alle, der synes, det er en god idé at have sådan en chip i hånden, som overvåger ens liv og ens tilstand. Derfor så havde jeg inviteret en af de svenske bagmænd, en af de såkaldte svenske cyborgs, som de blev kaldt i en nyhedsartikel på BBC på et tidspunkt, til debat på konferencen Technomania i Herning her i den forgangne uge. Technomania, det er sådan en digital konference, der ligger i maven på HI-messen, som er en mere traditionel industrimesse i Herning. Men på scenen, der havde jeg altså Hannes Sjöblad, der er svensk biohacker, og for ligesom at give ham lidt modspil, så havde jeg også inviteret den danske dataetiker og rådgiver i dataetik, Pernille Tranberg, for at de to kunne diskutere. Og det blev bestemt ikke kedeligt, fordi vi kom virkelig ud i nogle randområder af transhumanisme og de mere syrede aspekter af lige netop den tankegang. Så vi taler ikke kun om chips i hånden, vi taler også om at uploade sin hjerne til en computer og leve for evigt. Men alt det, det kan du høre her, hvor jeg stiller om til scenen på Technomania i Herning. God fornøjelse. Let's kick it off.
Thank you very much, Henrik. I've taken upon myself the little mission of upgrading mankind. That's what I want to do in my life. And I'm going to share with you a little bit of the story and the motivations why I think this is so important. And we call this human enhancement. So, improving humans. Why in the world should we improve humans? Well, let's start with this. We expire. Unless something dramatic happens, we're all going to end up in a situation like this. Our bodies are fragile, they are prone to catching disease, breaking. The wear and tear over time will ultimately kill us. We also have limited cognitive facilities. We have a hard time memorizing stuff. And if you look out in the animal kingdom, there are so many different senses that animals have that we don't have. We humans have a very limited experience universe. And you can even push the button a little bit further and say that we humans are even unfit for the future. Our bodies, our senses, and our brains and our instincts, they were all shaped in a very different time than the one we live in today. In the time when our bodies were formed, we were living in small tribes in the savanna or on the beaches in tropical countries. We didn't meet a lot of people. We were worried about being attacked by wild animals, and it was a very hard time to find food. We didn't know if we were going to survive the winter. Today we live in an information society, a welfare society, and a society of food and information abundance. We meet thousands of people in our daily lives if we travel, for example, with public transportation. The rules have changed. The world around us has changed, but we haven't changed with the times. We need to have new strategies and new solutions in order to deal with the 21st century and the world that we're going to inhabit from now on. Some observations on the human body is that the human body, I mean, shaped by evolution, slowly, organically evolving from one stage to another, there are a lot of what you could call, a little bit jokingly, design weaknesses with the human body. Take, for example, the fact of that our skeleton, it's actually designed for walking on four legs. We are the only animal that have risen up from walking on four and are now walking on two. And that leads to almost every human being sooner or later get back problems. I mean, if you would design a bipedal person, you would ultimately have something to counterweight, like a big tail, like kangaroos or Tyrannosaurus rexes they have, if you're going to walk on two legs. You can also discuss other dimensions of our immune system fallacies or other dimensions of the human body that are certainly not perfect. And if we would design ourselves from scratch, we would do away with them. But this is not just about the human body. There is one dimension that is a lot more important, and that is our moral and ethical decision systems. Unfortunately, from the time we were living in the savanna, we have inherited very primitive instincts that still rule a lot of our decision making. We are tribalist, we are xenophobic, we have this instinct that, you know, if this person looks different from me or speaks different from me, and therefore they belong to a different group than I am, and I want to take their resources and bring them to my group. This kind of decision making is very evident on the international political level. So at the same time, we have developed technologies with incredible capacity for destruction. We have the tools in our hands to wipe out all of mankind and all of human civilization in an afternoon. There are some pretty crazy people on this planet who, with the push of a button, can end human civilization. This is an urgent situation. We can't just accept this state of affairs. We need to improve also the human decision-making process in order for us to make better ethical decisions. I don't have to mention to you what we're also doing to the planet. We live in a time of the sixth great extinction on this planet, where we're destroying ecosystems and polluting rivers and oceans so that a lot of animals and plants are disappearing at a very rapid pace. So very briefly, what is human enhancement? Well, human enhancement is not just if someone loses a leg, you give them a nice super prosthetic. Human enhancement is not about restoring function. It's about improving function above the human baseline. In the transhumanist space, we speak of improving mankind in four different dimensions. The first one is curing disease and aging. We believe that aging should be seen as just another disease, just like cancer or Alzheimer's, and that society must invest in curing aging. At least death and aging should be voluntary. If you want to go that route, that's perfectly fine. The second dimension is enhancing human perception. What can we do in terms of hearing better, seeing better, smelling better, and getting completely new senses to better understand the world around us? There is the dimension of cognitive improvement, remembering stuff, getting better intellectual abilities in order to make better decisions. And ultimately, it is the dimension of transforming human instincts and decisions, because it's urgent. We cannot have a decision-making system that is based on hoarding of resources, for example. So yes, when we were living in the Stone Age society, it was very important to collect resources for the winter. But now, in this society when there's an abundance of food and resources, this drive that we all have in us to collect resources, I want a bigger car, a bigger house, bigger toys, that is what is ruining this planet. And yeah, we can talk about changing, this processes in production, etc., and recycling stuff, but the real problem sits up here. And unless we solve that, we're not going to solve the problem. It's just going to appear in a different form. Very quickly then, how do we enhance humans? Well, there are a few different technology areas. There is the dimension of pharmaceuticals. I mean, we can modify and improve our performance with a few percent at least through hormones, through medicines, through nootropics, cognitive enhancer drugs. The second dimension is cybernetics. Well, we can talk about a prosthetic arm with neurointegration, or a chip implant, or a pacemaker that keeps track of your heart, or augmented reality contact lenses that allows you to see different information fields on top of your existing visual field. But perhaps the most promising dimension is genetics. In November last year, in 2018, there was Chinese scientist He Jiankui, who actually did the first human gene editing on embryos, and two healthy babies were born. Guys, this is the most dramatic thing that has happened in the evolution of our species. This happened in our lifetimes. It happened last year. We have now come to the point that we are genetically reprogramming human beings. You may like it or not, but it's happening. And this is something we have to deal with. And you can see it as a threat, or you can see it as a tremendous opportunity to create better lives for all of mankind. Speaking of technology, when you walk around this beautiful exhibition here, you can see all kinds of smart tech. What we're seeing right now evolving is the whole ecosystem of near-body technology. Wearable sensors, headsets, devices you can swallow that will take a film of your gut system and analyze its health. Wearable patches that you can swipe with your smartphone just to get your blood sugar reading instead of having to draw blood from your finger if you suffer from diabetes. The medical technologies are rapidly evolving, but we can take beyond this stage. As Henrik mentioned initially, I am one of the now increasing number of people who enjoy having a little chip implant in my hand. Here's an image of my hand and all the devices that I have managed to get rid of and replace with this tiny implant. So I no longer have to use keys and key badges. I can have my business card sitting in my chip and you can swipe me if you want my contacts. I can store data like on a USB. Oh, sorry, this is the wrong slide. Here we go. You can also see other things. Programming cards, for example, that I can now do with this little implantable device in my hand. What I have done is that together with some other friends, we have developed an open source platform, like an Arduino that you can place under your skin. It can show a blinking light when you open it. And what we're currently doing is we're setting health sensors inside these implants. So with the swipe of a smartphone on your arm, you can actually get biometric readings. Our vision is that it should be as easy to check your health as it is to read your email. Right now, we really don't have any idea what's going on in our bodies. I could be dying. I could be suffering from some terrible disease, and I wouldn't know. If I need to do a test, I need to book a doctor's appointment, draw blood, and come back a couple of weeks later to discuss the analysis. I don't think that's an acceptable state of affairs. We must make this accessible to every person on the planet, that they can swipe and get input on how their body is doing in proper data, instead of just through, I feel a little bit tired today, I wonder what's wrong. It's not a good decision-making system. So the next generation implants will be able to not just do payments, encrypted identification, but also health measuring. As Henrik also mentioned, when we implant people, we love to hold implant parties. They're a lot of fun. You invite some friends together, we bring in a person coming from a piercing studio, and then we all get upgraded together. It's a lot of fun. And then people meet 1 year later, and we celebrate our first cyborg birthday. So we have a lot of fun in the biohacking community. I briefly mentioned that gene technology is not just for germline modification, it's in the case of Hijankui, but it's also being broadly applied in healthcare for treating cancer, for analyzing unborn babies, etc. So gene technologies are already available to a lot of us, but I encourage people to explore this further. When we talk about the moral dimension or the ethical dimension of applying these technologies to ourselves, there is a fundamental principle that I think you guys should be aware of. We call this the proactionary principle. You may know very well the precautionary principle. It's typically what we use when we try to do a change in a complex system. The idea is be careful. Be as careful as you can in order not to break something. But if you apply the proactionary principle, it's a concept where you must also see the potential upside of what you're doing. What if we could invent a technology to end aging? I think that the upside of such a technology would be marvelous for the flourishing of mankind. And even if we may not work this technology out perfectly in the beginning, since the upside is so great, we should seriously explore this idea. Human enhancement is a high-risk, high-reward investment with tremendous payoff if we do it right. So, to round off, what I want to say to you guys is that what I see in mankind today, in the beginning of the 21st century, is that we are not at the end of our evolution. We're actually just at the beginning. And we shouldn't be afraid to grow. We are like an acorn, a seed, that is just about to grow into a tree. And we shouldn't be afraid of that change because we can be so much more. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Hannes. Okay, guys. You have heard the pitch for having an implant, a health chip, put into your hand. So how many of you would like to have a chip like that? Not very many, like 2, 4, 5, 6, 7. Okay. Some smart people here. Okay, yeah, which one of them? Now we have to discuss who are the smart ones. Because Pernille, she will discuss what you just said from her point of view, which I know is a bit different. Please, Pernille Tramberg, data ethicist and advisor.
Well, is it working? You're just speaking out here? Well, I just want to say that for me, an implant of a chip is the first step to transhumanism. And this is where I think we should really discuss where to set the limit. Because just a chip like that gives the owner of a factory or the owner of a company immensely power over humans or over their workers. It is a very, very efficient surveillance tool. You know, with this one, if you check in with this one, you can always turn it off or, the battery goes low. But with a chip in here, you are constantly monitored. It's something you can't just turn off. So you are, as an individual, losing control, and your boss is gaining much more power over you. The other issue is, how safe is it? How secure is it? How can you hack it easily? Most people say it's not secure. Most companies who work with security, they always employ, two-factor identification. How do you do that with this one? If it's going to be so convenient, you also need another identification, maybe a fingerprint or something, if you want it to be secure. And then I must say, I don't think it's cool, but that's up to you to think. If you think it's cool to implant stuff in your body just for convenience. Because where we need to distinguish is between need to have and nice to have. Of course there are examples. We have a lot of people here in Denmark who have a pacemaker. That's a kind of an implant, and that's totally okay. I also think that if you lose an arm in war, it's fine to get an artificial limb. That's also a kind of a transhumanistic thing to do. But There are lots of ethical issues even in getting this implant. Imagine if I hacked that implant and I put a gun in your hand and made you shoot somebody. Who has the responsibility for that? So there are lots and lots of ethical issues we need to discuss when we put everything online. You've probably seen Black Mirror. How many have seen Black Mirror in here? Most of you are. Those of you who haven't seen it, go home and see it. One of the episodes is about a mother who gets so afraid because her child loses sight of her child, and she is totally worried. So she implants a chip in her head so she could constantly see where she is. And you can imagine how that evolves. It's really, really good. Another one is where you have a chip in your head so you can remember earlier episodes in your life. You can remember, you know, stuff like if your girlfriend or boyfriend has been unfaithful to you and you never forget it, you can roll back and see it again and again and again. And it's totally destroying you. So I think this is simply, this is science fiction, but there's something about it. And we see this movement, like Elon Musk, who owns Tesla. He is a transhumanist like Hannes, and he is now working on a brain implant so he can actually enhance the brain. If you haven't seen Years and Years, how many saw Years and Years on HBO Nordic? Go see that, because that's really, really, really good as well. One of the girls has to go to her mother and tell her something she's really worried about, and the mother thinks, oh my God, she's a lesbian or something. But then she says, I want to upload my whole brain to the internet and be a transhumanist, or actually even die physically. That was her dream, you know, in the beginning. It's a really good movie with Emma Thompson. And if you haven't read Yuval Harari, who is an Israeli historian, you should also check him out, because what he talks about, when we talk about human enhancement, who will be able to afford human enhancement? It will, of course, be the rich. So we might get a new race of humans called superhumans. And how many will there be of those superhumans? There will be a big class of useless class, unemployed class, who have lost their jobs to self-driving cars and robots. And then few people who can afford to enhance themselves. So we also need to think about equality here. The last thing I want to say about ethics is to put human in the center. We are humans. We are natural humans, most of us still. And I'm not religious, but maybe we shouldn't manipulate too much with biology. It's something we have stopped deciding what kind of color eyes your son or daughter or baby should have, right? Because we think it's unethical. And this is a discussion we need here as well. And we already now see big companies trying to get rid of humans. A company like Uber, they give 70% of their turnover today to human drivers. Investors put money in Uber because the end goal is getting rid of humans, because then they can get all the turnover. They want self-driving cars and a whole infrastructure. Can you see that? So it's really important to think that, well, we need to put humans in the center. That's who we are. And when I talk about being human-centric, it's all of us have a responsibility of that. Governments need to go in and set the limits. How far do we want to go? And of course, enforce the laws we have so we can get privacy and stuff like that. Individuals, I think I heard a guy a couple of days ago say, who do you kiss first in the morning, your smartphone or your boyfriend or girlfriend? And since then, I've kissed my boyfriend first. I think we should remember that. Always be human before we start on our iPhones. We also need to understand as individuals that this is about learning new skills so we can keep jobs and keep lives. As companies, I think we also, in the future, will see a trend where it's ethical to actually employ humans, instead of just getting rid of humans to automate everything. I think that's my input for now, because we're going to discuss it.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you, Pernille. I'd like to do the vote again. So how many of you would like to have a health implant, a chip in your hand now? Oh, even more. That's funny.
That's funny, all right?
Yeah.
Who wants to not, I mean, how can you not want to understand what's going on in your body? It just makes sense. And you
well,
can take it out whenever you
it's
want.
It's not just understanding what goes on in your body. Of course, if you are diabetic and you have a chip and you want to check your blood sugar, that might be okay. But you have one just to for fun also. It's for health reasons, there might be good reasons to do
this. Everyone should know their blood sugar. Every single person here, because we're eating 40 times the sugar.
Do you want to know if you die when you're 50? Do you want to know the risk of dying when you're 50?
Yeah, but the implant won't tell you that. But I want to have as many people as possible avoid dying at the age of 50. And by helping people understand what's going on in their bodies, because you know what? The system we have for understanding what's happening in our bodies right now is not very good.
I just have one question. Can I ask one question?
Sure.
So
yeah.
When you say you want to stop aging, do you then imagine that, how old are you now?
I'm 45.
You're 45. So you expect being 45 the rest of your life, or do you expect to be 250?
I would like my heart to be in the shape of a young age, but I would like my wisdom to be that of an experienced
and
person.
And you don't want wrinkles and stuff?
I don't mind. I'm already getting a few, so...
It's going to be a funny world, you know, to see all these 250 years
but
old
Pernille,
walk around.
I must, let's before we go into specific, I want to point out something, or maybe you want to run this conversation?
you make your point and then I will...
Yes, sorry.
...interfere.
I'm sorry to say, but I think... Seriously, you are on the wrong side of history with a few of the statements you make. For example, that we shouldn't intervene in biology. Let me tell you, 100 years ago, every other child in Denmark died from infectious disease. We have intervened with penicillin, vaccines, and modern healthcare. Biology, the old way, was that every other kid should die before the age of 5. I'm happy that we actually have intervened in biology through vaccines. Actually, if we didn't have vaccines, half of you wouldn't be sitting here.
But I didn't say we shouldn't intervene. I said,
you said we shouldn't intervene in biology.
Need to have and nice to have.
Yes, but there are many good examples in where biology is actually a very raw system, and we can make it a lot more humane by tuning it into ethical values. Transhumanism comes from humanism. It's all about setting the human beings at the center of things, but in difference from the classic distinction between the natural sciences not understanding the humanities, transhumanism is humanism based on a deep understanding of technology, bridging these two in a synthesis useful for understanding the 21st century. Sorry, Henrik.
No, that's okay. What you're saying is that you will have a longer and better life, and you will possibly live like forever.
I think that it would be a fair point to make death and aging voluntary. I think it's sad that so many wonderful people are pulled away from life before they are done, especially when they're just beginning to achieve wisdom.
But if you look at the world today, I was in India last week, 1.2 billion people. I think 70% of them are under the age of 35. So if we add a lot of people who will live to their, like, 250 or 300, 500, whatever, at least more than 100 years, we will have a serious problem with overpopulation. How should we cope with that?
It's a valid observation that we're already, with the current amount of people on this planet, are fucking the ecosystem pretty bad. Mm. That has to be solved anyway. But I wouldn't say it's acceptable to remove a lot of people from the planet. So we need to solve our better energy systems, recycling systems and resource systems. But I want to point out something which is at the heart of this question, are we overpopulated or not? My point is that the human brain is the most important, most valuable materia in the known universe. There is nothing like the human brain. The human brain is actually the universe becoming conscious of itself.
And you want to manipulate with it?
No, what I want to say is that the human brain the universe is better if there are more human brains in the universe. And of course we need to sort out the plumbing of food and waste, but more human brains is such a universal good that it overrules these petty priorities of plumbing.
So if we go down this road, longer living, better health, better longer living, you could say, and you say it's only for the rich.
Yeah.
But if you look at technology, it becomes cheaper and cheaper and cheaper. So we might have first movers who are evidently very rich because they can afford to have this technology and live for a very long time. But won't it be like all other technologies that it will drop in price and we will all have the benefits?
Well,
because
it might
someone
be in the
was
long run.
The first mover.
But I also work with aging scientists who are trying to find ways how we can live better when we get older. And I think that must be the end goal, not getting necessarily older, but living better. Working on being 150 or 200 is, in my eyes, pretty insane, because that's against the human nature. And I think it's very good that a lot of people have died, honestly. I mean, Hitler, Mussolini, there are lots of other people who died during time.
Well,
so
that was a good thing,
pretty
but
good.
I think it's human life is the first principle of the United Nations Declaration of Human Rights, is the right to life. I think that when we allow people to die from aging and disease, we're actually failing in this very important core human-centric value if we just allow this aging thing to continue.
Yeah, this aging thing, it's a very natural thing among humans.
Could you
we're dying, you know.
Could both of you please define what you think human nature is?
A human nature? I mean, I didn't really think about it. It's being a human. We are so lucky that we have 70, 80, 90 years on Earth, where we try and get the best out of it. And if you're not getting sick, it's wonderful. You might have a happy life. Or it's a human life where we are human together.
So
it's
right,
not making love to a robot. Or
so like the rest of the species,
maybe that's
plants,
really
trees
nice.
And so on, and you have a sort of a life cycle. And
it's
then
a life cycle, yeah.
No, I want to challenge that point. I want to say that the definition of being human in relation to not being an animal is that we humans apply technology. Monkeys, dogs, etc., they don't understand how to use technology. So actually, applying technology is what makes us human. And applying technology to improving ourselves, we've been doing that since we were living in caves, making fire and dressing ourselves in skins. Putting augmented reality headsets and chip plants on top of ourselves is the most normal, the most human thing we can ever do, because that is what defines us as humans. It's just that you take the stone club and turn it into a virtual reality device.
So why do we want to, I mean, one thing is that we've had computers and smartphones and been online through that for a long time now, for a couple of decades. Now we get Internet of Things, which we put online as well, but you also want to put your body online. So in that way, you're creating a total surveillance machine where those in power over the infrastructure, it might be the state, it might be big tech, they are in control of you. Why do you want that? I mean, don't you want to be in control of your own life as a human being?
I absolutely do, Pernille.
Yeah?
And this is why I'm happy to be living in Europe and in Scandinavia. As we discussed earlier, I think that there is a... What we're seeing right now is a clash of systems on this planet, where we have, especially in terms of data ethics, where we have the US system, where companies can do whatever they want with people's data. They can harvest it and sell it and share it in any direction. We have the Chinese model, which is being copied by a lot of authoritarian states like Russia and Turkey and Iran, which is all about the state controlling its citizens through capturing all their data. And then we do have a beacon of light, which is the European Union and the certain other countries who respect human rights, who are concerned about privacy. And we are seeing some fascinating lawsuits taking place in Europe right now, which is powerfully on the side of us as individuals respecting our human rights and privacy. And yes, I believe that all these super powerful technologies must be made with human rights and privacy and ethics in the forefront.
Who controls the data in your hand?
I do.
You do, because you own that company.
Because I invented the technology.
You invented it. Yeah. So all of us buying a chip from you, you control my data as well, right?
Ultimately, So we are a bunch of biohackers who have been experimenting with these implants for a few years. We've had a lot of fun. And let me tell you this. Chip implant technology will exist whether we like it or not. I think it's great that it's being explored by enthusiasts, hackers, citizens, and small entrepreneurs. The day when a government comes and say, "Yeah, we're gonna chip implant they're gonna start with like some group, like people in prisons should have implants, or we put a chip in grandma."
Old people.
Yeah. Trust me, I will be on the barricades. And you know what?
But that's what resist. Google and Facebook say. They are always on the barricades, yes, for the consumers.
They're bullshitters.
You're not.
I'm not. Because what I want to say is that this technology exists whether we do it or not. I think the knowledge of it should be in the public domain. And the fact that technology can always be used for us and against us. And the only way to protect ourselves from being abused by technology is to understand it, which is why we need to educate ourselves about surveillance tech, which is why we need to educate ourselves about digital biology, AI, machine learning, and all these things, because this knowledge should be in the hands of the citizens and not some decision makers in politics or academic ivory towers.
There's a saying that everything is hackable, all technology is hackable, but if you become technology then and have a chip in your hand, you will be hackable. I mean, how will you protect yourself? How should we protect ourselves?
Yeah, it's hackable, but you have to make a risk analysis. Okay, someone hacks my implant, it makes they can go into my office. You know, it's not a dramatic loss for me.
But what if it's health data?
What if it's health data? So, if for financial data and health data, of course, there is a much greater importance on privacy. My perspective on this is that I think the market is already working on solutions for this, because the hardware is not what makes the difference. We have a lot of apps and wearables that are already logging health, and they're developing good data protection systems, privacy systems, and security systems. And so the market has already developed a whole range of solutions to the problem. And the difference between the implant and the wearable is actually, that's not where the battle stands.
Does anyone have a question?
I have two questions for the both of you. The first one is, I would just say, Johannes, we are always afraid and we will always see ghosts in new technology. I completely agree with you. And we have to look at them. You were saying that we have to test it and try it out. Definitely, but we don't need to test it and try it out by having it in our hands. Maybe we could also test it without doing that. With that said, I'm pretty sure that this will be something that we will see in the future. My problem with this, and the first question would be, how do we avoid that technology is taken advantage of? Because everything we've seen until now is that we get commercials everywhere on Facebook, on Google, whatever we do. Big companies who need the data will get the data. Insurance company will give us specific insurance prices based on whatever we earn or do, and they already do this, but they will have even bigger access. And I'm a little bit afraid of that access. So how do you see that? And second question would be, how old do you have to be to determine if you want to have a chip in your hand? What should be the limit? Because what we know as an 18-year-old is different than what we know when we're 45, 50, 100, or 200 years old. What is the right time that you have developed enough experience to determine if you want it or not? That would be my question. Because we have already, every point of human evolution has been pushing the limit to when we die. We cannot, this is a fundamental base of the human being. And I think it's kind of beautiful that we eventually have to die. But the two questions, how do we avoid being taken advantage of? And when, how old should you be to determine if you want it or not? Can your parents determine it for you?
I can answer the second question first, and this is a very simple, the law considers that a chip implant is considered a piercing, so at the age of 18 you can do what you want to your body, and that's the simple rule in most countries. So that's what the law says, that's how we operate. Then you can qualify it in many dimensions, but I think it's a fair point for that decision. So I would never implant my kids.
Why not?
Because it's their bodies and their decisions. So it's about respecting their privacy. for the first question, do you want to comment?
Yeah, the first question about how do we secure we have control over data. I think if we have to go this way, it will be the same answer as to what we're looking at today. We should have control over our own data. We don't have that in Europe yet, but we have the trends towards it. With GDPR, we can actually ask for our data and control our own data. And we have to develop that much, much further so that we end up with our data in kind of a bank, a personal data bank or personal data store where you control your own data. You decide, you set your privacy settings. Maybe you want to give all your data to scientists on public universities in Denmark. Maybe if an insurance company wants some more data and they don't get it automatically, then you can give real-time consent. So we can actually do this if we achieve the data democracy in Europe. But that's a long way to go. But it would have to be the same with the chip, right?
Could I ask a technical question about the health chip?
Yes, I just want to say first that I agree 100%.
Okay, that's not how it's meant to be.
No, but
you don't have
to
agree.
But I can qualify it a little bit further.
It's
but
great.
To Henrik, please.
Yeah. No, yeah, I'm just thinking because when you talk about the data, I imagine that the chip will only harvest data and send it somewhere else. It's not going to store it forever.
Correct. So there are a few, super quickly, the way this technology currently works is that this is a passive chip. It doesn't have a battery, so it cannot transmit any information. If I get lost in the, are there any woods outside of Herning? No, in the fields? You can't find me because of the chip. It cannot transmit a signal at all. It only wakes up when I touch it with a phone. And this means that I control exactly when it is transmitting. And yes, second that I mentioned, no, you don't store a lot of data. It's all the chip triggers and the information is stored on your phone. So in that sense, it's...
But it's no different than my ring then. So why have a chip when you can have a ring?
For convenience, because you may lose that ring or you may take it off and you need to charge it. And there's 100 reasons why a chip implant is a frictionless experience. Mm. Once it is installed, a wearable, you have to charge it. You have to ask yourself, does this look good on me anymore? Maybe you gain a little bit of weight or lose a little bit of weight. It's not fitting anymore. There's 100 reasons why wearables
is a shitty
transitionary stage. Well, you also can capture a lot better data under the skin than outside of the skin. Mm. It's the quality of the data. I want to make one addition to your thought about data protection and implants. Because what we're seeing right now is that we have a transition to biometric identification using fingerprints or voice or face, right? In Chinese shops, you can pay with smiling to a camera. The payment isn't approved unless you smile, which is a pretty fucked up thing. My view is that biometrics is dangerous. Don't put your fingerprints, don't put your voice, face, in a system that you cannot trust, because if the data leaks, your data is compromised forever. You can never change your fingerprints. We have already seen big leaks and hacks where hackers have stolen fingerprint data. And it's not that if you lose a bank card, you can get a new one, but your fingerprints you can never renew. And you know what's even worse? If you use, like, for example, unlocking your phone with your face, is there some people here who does that? Don't, because you know what? If you know what this camera knows, it's not just like an ID to open your phone. It takes a picture of your face. It knows your body temperature. If you have a fever, if you're stressed, you can give so much health data from swiping your face. And you're giving 30 times a day. You give a health update to this company, and you're saying you should be worried about that.
I'm on an Apple. They are not taking my. They're not measuring my
they're
senses
learning
out of the
a
picture.
Lot. They're learning a
yeah,
lot
I
from
know,
this.
Yeah, I know, but they have a really good privacy policy.
I like and respect
I trust
Apple.
Them. Yeah.
We have more questions.
Yeah.
Who's next?
Don't do biometrics, guys.
Every single technology we have had so far, it's been misused. You know, who thought Facebook, who would connect people together, would be able to, you know, connect two people from two other continents, would be used to, you know, ruin elections. So you see where I'm going with this. I know that you have clear intentions of, you know, making this as right as possible and only be used as a health matter. but you're laying grounds and you're making foundations for this technology that could possibly be misused. And we know with people that got different agendas than you, they will make a device that can be misused. What about the other countries that don't have the European as the beam light? For example, Iran, as you mentioned, or North Korea, or the US. What about the capitalists then, you know?
Say this to the guy that invented the stone axe. He shouldn't have done it because it could be used to kill people.
Well, you know, I'm just saying that measurements should be taken to ensure that this technology can't be misused the same way.
I agree 100%. We must be vigilant, and we must have many more conversations like this.
Do you have a question, or it was just a comment? Okay.
What countermeasures would you take, for example? Do you have anything in mind? You're the co-founder, right?
Yes. Well, of one of the many companies in this space. We work a lot with privacy by design companies, for example. And we are based in Europe. We based our data systems in Europe. We would never put them in a US cloud system, for example.
But we hope we can just hope that you won't regret it, just like a lot of people who invested in Facebook regretted it afterwards, right? They have been out and said, told their excuses because of this surveillance monster. So in a way, I mean, you say tech is there, so we have to use it, and yes, but we as humans in more or less control, we need to set the limits.
We need to understand the technology.
We want to go here and not here.
Yes.
Yeah, we need to understand it, I totally agree.
The first step is to understand it, and the best way to understand it is to try it.
Well, I will listen to you and understand it. I don't
okay.
want it.
There was a question somewhere down here. I think the guy over there, he was first.
If I remember correctly, the platform that you put up on the screen before, that you were co-founding, is that correct? It
yes.
was an open source platform. Is this a space where we should be extra careful that we work on open and free solutions rather than go with the more classical, closely developed products? And is there a reason for that?
Yes, it's the reason for us. I mean, there are many implant companies in the world. The reason we want to go open is because we come from the activist world, from the hacker spaces and biohackers. We want, for us, the driving force for biohackers is not to do crazy experiments. It's because we want to educate the public about new technology. This is at our heart. Everybody must have an understanding of this, because this is the only way to prevent that some authority will abuse this technology against us. This is why we want this to be as openly shared, openly accessible, and as well understood as possible.
Yes, hello. You said something very interesting at the start of the conference about our locomotion, being bipedal and all that. And obviously, I don't think anyone here wants a mandatory upgrade or anything, but more out of curiosity, what do you think an upgrade to our locomotion would look like?
Well, you have some great potential in exoskeletons, for example. That would help people with, especially if you get a little bit older or weaker muscles, that can help you support. Exoskeletons is another exponentially getting cheaper technology. Right now, you have the military stuff that weigh 50 kilos and take 10 minutes to strap on. I would like for them to be as easy as a pair of blue jeans. You buy them for 500 krona and pull them on. That's for me is a good example to improve locomotion.
One. We have time for one last question. There's one down here.
Do you think humans have infinite potential in form of this technology? Do you think we can keep on developing?
Yeah, totally. I think what we see, this is a liberation movement, right? We must liberate ourselves from the meat bags that we're born in, right? Just because you're born in a small village somewhere doesn't mean you have to live all your life in that tiny village. You can move to the bigger city. Just because you're born in a flawed meat bag that is, you know, going to break apart in a few decades doesn't mean you have to inhabit that, you know, biological substrate all your life. Imagine for a second if we could upload our brains onto a digital medium, like hardware, and our consciousness would be pure software. Yes, this is a good ending note, right? What would we be able to do? We would be able to travel to the stars with the speed of light, not like monkeys in a tin can that takes, you know, 10,000 years to go to the closest star. That's the future of mankind.
Hannes, that's a discussion that we never really had with Ray Kurzweil, for instance, because You can go to the stars with your mind, but you lose your body.
Seems like it's worth it.
It is. All the sensations you can discover and have with your body, you will lose those. I mean, how will you have sex with your wife, for instance, if you go to the stars?
I do
in your
from
mind?
Time to time.
You do from time to time. You still do that, but you want to give it up.
No, I don't want to give it up. You know what, Henrik? There are. I love that being in Denmark. You, as a Swede, you take me a little bit on the side with this kind of questions. But it's.
Sorry about that.
I think it's fantastic to imagine that our nerve system right now is just limited by the skin of our body. But if we can truly connect our brain to a global system of sensors, I have a good friend. She has an implant in her body that is connected to the global system of earthquake sensors. So whenever there is an earthquake somewhere on the planet, she feels the vibration in her arm. She is connected to a much bigger sensor system. What if we can experience these things? Wouldn't that sort of improve our understanding of the world by orders of magnitude?
So are you saying that a digital orgasm is better than a physical orgasm?
I'd like to try both.
Okay, I think that might be the end note.
You would like to have underestimate intellectual orgasms as well. I hope you had a few.
Okay, thank you. I should mention that Hannes has written a book which will be out in the spring called Menneske Plus. It's out in Swedish first.
You'll see it in Danish too.
We will see it in Danish too. Great.
What is it called?
So you can have more intellectual orgasms if you want. I hope you enjoyed yourself learning about transhumanism and biohacking. And by the way, how many of you would like to have a chip implant now? All the guys who wanted it, that they have left. I think there's an implant party going on. Or
we'll do that next year.
Yeah, implant party next year. Thank you for coming.
Transhumanism.
Du har lyttet til Tektopia, der var på besøg i Herning til Teknomania. Du kan som altid finde mere på tektopia.dk. Du kan skrive til mig på henrik@tektopia.dk. Du kan kigge med på Twitter på @tektopia.dk. Og du kan besøge vores gruppe på Facebook, der hedder Tektopia Backstage. Tilbage er der kun at sige på genhør i næste uge. Tektopia er en podcast om mennesker og deres teknologi. Den er udgivet af Ingeniørforeningen IDA i samarbejde med Teknologiens Mediehus, HI-messen, Index Award, Innovation Center Danmark og IDA Forsikring. Mit navn er Henrik Føns, og det er mig, der bestemmer i Tektopia. Thank you.